six literal 24-hour days of creation is a interpretation, is a point of view that a right-thinking, logical, pro-science, reasonable-brained person can have. I'm not going to tell you this is absolutely what you must believe in order to be a Christian, because that's not true. I am going to tell you it's what I'm persuaded by, and I, in general, don't believe things that I think are wrong. So I think it's right, and I'm going to argue it as though it's right. But what's most important for me is that when we're done discussing this chapter, you don't feel like, well, that one, there's no way that could be true because we know better. And so I couldn't say out loud in public that I think that's true because I'd come across as an idiot. You need to have the confidence that we have really strong intellectual ground to stand on, apart from what I would say is the more important spiritual biblical ground of God said it. God said it. And all of the other views, this isn't a disqualifier, but all of the other views have to take far more confusing, more complicated, less direct interpretations. They have to explain away what the text seems to be clearly saying for reasons that I'll get into, which if they were great, unimpeachable reasons, you might do that sometimes. We certainly do it in Revelation. We read Revelation. We say this is a genre where we don't take it literally. We don't think there's going to be a beast and a dragon flying around the sky and it's not going to look like this, and here's why. I'm not saying we have to interpret every word of the Bible literalistically, but we in general do what the text tells us to do. And so the argument I'm going to make is twofold. One is six literal 24-hour days is what the text tells us to do. And argument two is there is nothing in the realm of logic or philosophy or science that makes that a real problem, that makes doing that dumb. So that's my goal for this chapter. I think it's going to take us several weeks. We're going to go through several rabbit trails because I want to make sure we're on the same page with respect to terms, what we are and are not saying. And so we're going to answer the broad question, how do we interpret the words of Genesis 1?
I understand what you're saying about some things literal versus not literal. There has to be some sort of method for how we draw that line.
That's right.
That feels like a...
The clues are in the text. Just like when you read the newspaper, it says obituary at the top of the page to tell you what you're in for. So it's not magic. It's not mysticism. It's the way words get used. So if I say, Nathan, you need to give a piece of paper to everyone. Do you understand what the word everyone means? If I said, y'all went to the Hoffer family reunion this weekend, everyone was there. Do you know what the word everyone means? Do they mean the same thing? No. But you know what they mean because of the context of the words around them. So in the same way, when people say, oh, you're just arbitrarily, it's not what you said, but people will say, you just arbitrarily get to decide what parts of the Bible are literal and what parts aren't. You just get to arbitrarily decide what the definition of anyone is. Because that's how words work. That's how we use language. That's how we talk. How many of you were at the lake this week like we were, at the end of the day, watching what was happening in the sky, and said, what a beautiful moment where the Earth's rotation is sending the stationary sun out of our point of view. Oh, no, you say sunset? What a beautiful sunset? Well, the sun doesn't move. What are you, an idiot? What are you, a savage? We know the sun doesn't move. The Earth does. It's how language works. And everybody in the world gets to use language in the way that's fair, except for who? Christians interpreting the Bible. We're the only ones that are told, no, you're not allowed to use language the way everybody else uses it. Does that help?
Yes.
And we will talk about some of those specific clues as we move along. And it's not just in creation. In this morning's sermon, I'm going to get into, it's not a lot, it's a couple paragraphs, much more granular detail about the specific words in this verse of Romans than I normally do. And it's because I think most of us have interpreted the passage I'm preaching on today or had it interpreted for us wrong our whole lives. Not horrifically wrong, but just not accurate. And you really got to pay attention to the words that Paul's using over and over again. He uses them in a specific way for a specific meaning. And so if we're good readers, then the author can make clear to us what he's trying to say. Authorship is not subjective. It's not, it means whatever you want it to mean. It means whatever the author meant when he wrote it and intended for you to understand. And we are capable of knowing what that is. Oh, great question. Any others as we start?
Wouldn't you say as well that it's not just the context but the genre that the author is intending to write? Well, I think a lot of the arguments between good, faithful, Bible-believing Christians is...
What genre is this?
What genre is this meant to be?
Yeah, the way I would... And we'll get there in just a minute. The words are what tell us what genre this is my argument. Not my argument. Way smarter people than me. Right? But the words, it's not like we have historical narrative written on the top of this section. We have the words, the language of historical narrative all throughout, the Vav consecutive being the biggest, which I'll get there. Let me pray and then we'll get going. And just my expectation is, stop me and ask me questions along the way. I am not trying to march through this lesson in a week or two. So ask your questions as they come up and we'll handle them. All right? Father, thank you for today. Thank you for the Lord's Day. Thank you that you love us. Thank you that part of your love was revealing yourself to us, not just in the world that you've made, but in your word, in special revelation, where you had these things written down for us, for our good, for our understanding. Give us greater understanding this morning so that we can glorify you even in the way that we think. We pray this in Jesus' name. Amen. There are three categories of creation worldviews. The first choice we have to make is, which category do we find persuasive? And when I say first, I mean philosophically. It may not be the first one we come to. We may look at all the evidence and then come back to this choice. But I want this choice to be in the top of your mind. The mechanism by which we have biodiversity. Yep. That's my question. How do we have so many creatures? These are my buckets. Okay? The first worldview option is naturalistic. Naturalism, full-blown Darwinian evolution. Entirely naturalistic. There is nothing outside of the material. There is no supernatural ever at any point in the experience. You've got a Big Bang that was a natural process, and you've got natural selection that is an entirely natural materialistic process, and everything that exists exists because of those two things. You can nuance on the Big Bang part. There's lots of scientific theories that are alternatives to the Big Bang. But you know what I mean when I say Big Bang. This idea that something other than God caused material to be, and that material took it from there and did everything else. So everything we have is because of that. One of the things that naturalism requires is time. Lots and lots and lots of time. If everything that is the result of chance, of accidents, combinations of accidents accumulating over time as those accidents give a competitive advantage, so to speak. The monkeys that have the tails that are strong enough to hang on to the branches outlive the monkeys whose tails are too weak to hang on to the branches. So in the end, all monkeys have strong enough tails to hold on to branches. But how did the first monkey get a strong enough tail? Accident. Genetic accident. Chance. You're relying on these chances for every single change. And what science has always said is that takes lots and lots of time. In fact, that takes billions of years, which is why when they say the world is 54 billion, however many years old, that's why they're saying that. They're not saying the world is as old as it is because they go back and they've got stuff that is that old that they can reliably test and say the world is this old because of that. All the assumptions about how old the world is are based on two things: how far light has traveled and at what speed, and how much time we would need to have even a reasonable possibility of some of these chances taking place. The new science on time is fascinating because what the guys have realized who are studying biochemistry and who are looking not at DNA, because DNA is too big, at individual proteins within DNAs. So we're going down as small as we can, essentially, to make a random chance do something good with a single protein. One single protein. And what they've realized is the amount of time you need to get a chance to happen that's positive in one single protein is more like quadrillions of years, not billions of years. And that's one protein. So what real scientists who are not committed to Darwinian evolution no matter what the real scientists are now writing in academic papers is we got to come up with a better model because there's not enough time for full-blown naturalism. There's not. There is no possible way that there has been enough time, even in their model, to get what we have now. They thought it was billions of years. It is quadrillions times quadrillions times quadrillions. It is absolutely absurd. There is nothing guiding the process. It's an important component of this that it's all chance. So we got time, we got chance. So if you take this view, then what is Genesis 1? It's a silly myth. It's written by primitive people to try and make sense of a world around them that they don't understand how it got there. Second option, theistic evolution. This is the popular option among the smart Christians, he says with a sly smile. Because what does this do? This says, look, we don't want to disagree with you people. You have PhDs, but your theory doesn't work. We don't have enough time. And by the way, your theory doesn't answer some really, really, really important questions. So in this, I said, everything is material. There's nothing outside of the material. Do you exist? All of you, you exist? Do you know you exist? So you have consciousness, and you are conscious of your consciousness, right? Well, that's immaterial. The fact that you know, the fact that you know you are, the fact that you know there are things that are not, all of that is immaterial. So this can't explain why your brain can do things that a fish brain can't do, which is to know that you are. To ask existential questions, to think about the nature of reality. You think the fish is under there thinking about the nature of the universe, contemplating what role they play in this giant cosmic puzzle? No, it's being a fish, right? This view can't explain really important questions. You know the other thing this view can't explain? Where'd the first stuff come from? If everything else happened because of chance, everything else happened because these atoms bumped into those atoms and we'll see what happens. That's fine. Where did the first atoms come from? Something had to make the atoms. So the theistic evolutionists, because they're so smart, they say to the Darwinian evolutionists, you got a problem. You got a really good theory here. And by good, we mean, I don't know. But we need God just to make matter. And then what God will do, essentially, God is the maker of the process of evolution. God says, the way that I want the world to be formed, the way that I want everything to come to be, is through this process of evolution. And so God starts the gears spinning on evolution. And so what God does, and theistic evolutionists, because of the time problem here and because of a few other problems, they've had to shift over the years. It used to just be kind of no different than deism, that God is this great watchmaker and he makes the watch and he winds it up and then it does its thing. But now, because of the time problem, they've realized that if God had only winded up the watch at the beginning, we still wouldn't have enough time to get what we need to. So now you get God intervening randomly to make simple so that the process can make it complex. So God will create simple matter, and through the process of evolution, it can become more complex. Is this mind-blowing enough? You all look thoroughly fascinated.
It seems so much like God.
It just seems like they're just trying to make up stuff to not believe God.
Yes. Why would you make this? Well, why would you make this up? Because you're anti-God. Why would you make this up? Fear. Fear of man. Oh, Jake doesn't like that answer because he knows that there are some people in this camp who are persuaded by scientific evidence and are trying to reconcile what the Bible says with science. I don't understand those people at all anymore. I did 10 years ago. What it looks like to someone who's not committed to biblical truth is that you're going to accept what the Bible says no matter what the evidence is in front of you. I don't care what the evidence is. They could find the bones of Jesus. I believe Jesus was raised from the dead and ascended. Well, that's insane. But that's what some people think you're doing when you say, I reject this, is you're saying, I don't care what the evidence is. That's not what I'm saying at all. The evidence is really, really, really bad. It's not evidence at all. This, and this is where I'm going to get to at the end. These don't solve the problem they're trying to solve, and they introduce huge problems that we didn't have to solve before that now we do. One of the great books on this uses the example of you pour a can of Campbell's alphabet soup into the pot when you get home from church, and you go change clothes, and you come back. What would you think if when you got back to the pot, you looked down, and you saw the word cat right in front of you in the center of the pot? You'd think, well, that's pretty crazy. I got a cat, right? That's believable. What would you think if you saw the preamble to the Declaration of Independence? Someone came in and set it up. That's what everyone would think. Someone did this on purpose. You look at this world with 85 quadrillion specific choices, and rational people say, someone set this up. And it's only people who say, there is no one who could do the setting up, who would possibly look at the soup and say, oh, that's random. Right? My notes here. It takes billions of years, actually quadrillion plus, because they still have a time problem, which is why they're sometimes having God intervene. Moving from simpler to complex through random mutations, God created the process with an intended outcome. This view denies miracles in the creative process, but allows miracles in other places. So this view says no miracles, because matter is all there is. This view says God can heal the lame, he can raise the dead. He just didn't perform miracles with respect to biodiversity, with respect to creation, where the creatures came from. He created a natural process by which that occurs. Does that make sense? So what do they believe about Genesis 1? We're going to call it poetic. They don't think it's ridiculous. They think it's not answering the question we think it's answering. We think it's answering, how did God create? And they think it's answering a more broad question. What kind of God created what kind of world and why? But not in what amount of time, by what process. Genesis 1's not about that in their mind. It's creation poetry. The broad argument they would say is the Bible's not a science textbook. The purpose of a science textbook is to teach you science. The purpose of the Bible is to teach you about God and about his redemptive plan with humanity. And most of them would say it's as simple as that. There are places where the Bible speaks about science in ways that we know are not correct. It speaks about the earth as the center of God's universe. We know that's scientifically untrue. The broad argument that they would make is it's not a science textbook. Stop looking to it for scientific answers. And I'm going to speak to that somewhere in this outline. I don't remember where. So the third one's going to be intelligent design. Just on the issue of biodiversity, how do we get so many creatures? Your options are entirely naturalistic, theistic evolution, and intelligent design. All right, last one, intelligent design. Now, let's just say a moment about the term. The term has been somewhat co-opted, but don't let the term be co-opted, because it's a great term in this category, in this sense. Where did biodiversity come from? Why do we have all these creatures? Entirely natural process. God intervened, but not specifically, miraculously, intentionally. And then back to my soup analogy. Somebody made it this way on purpose. You find the sentence written in the soup, it's because somebody came in and arranged the letters just that way. It's not an accident. Why does DNA function the way it does? Because somebody made it that way. Why do cells work the way cells work? Because somebody made it that way. Why did the monkey get the strong enough tail to hang from the branch? Because somebody made it that way. That's what intelligent design says. That when you see purposeful design, when it looks like something was done on purpose, the more complex or the less likely it is that that on purpose was an accident, there's a designer. Right? You can find a stick that's shaped like a sword, right? And you say, huh, that stick's kind of shaped like a sword. That's cool. But if you go outside and you find a stick that has a handle and that has leather wrapped around the bottom and that goes up and has this really sharp point on the end, what are you going to say? Somebody made a sword. Because they did. Swords don't fall out of trees. Where did this view come from? This is important. Because what you'll be accused of is that, oh, this is trying to sneak creationism in the back door. The only reason anybody believes intelligent design is because they're all covert agents trying to sneak literal six-day creation in the back door. It's not where this came from. Intelligent design exists because naturalistic explanations do not fit the data. The world looks designed. We don't have enough time to accomplish all of the random mutations that need to be accomplished. We are denying the rational faculties that we possess if we say all of this is an accident. All of this is chance. This is getting home from church and having the Declaration of Independence in your soup and saying, one out of a million chances. It's not one out of a million. It's one out of 860 quadrillion that you would even get a four-letter word in your soup. You've got a sentence, right? It is denying rational faculties to say that there was not a purposeful designer. Irreducible complexity. Do y'all know what this is? What does natural selection say? Natural selection, go back to my monkey tail example. The monkeys with the stronger tails can get higher up the trees. They can escape predators compared with the monkeys who don't have the strong tails. So what happens? Well, the monkeys with the strong tails live. The monkey with the weak tails die. So future generations of monkeys have what? Strong tails. That's how natural selection works. That's absolutely true. If I put in a room of kids with blue shirts and a room of kids with red shirts, and I give the blue shirt kids clubs and guns and knives and swords, and I give the other kids nothing, all that's going to be left is blue shirt kids, right? And they're going to pass on their blue shirtedness to the next round of kids. Natural selection is absolutely true. This works. Problem is, where did they get the swords and the knives from? Where did the first monkey get the strong tail from? So then you have to say, okay, genetic mutations. Take something really simple. Take a mousetrap. It's the common example, right? Mousetrap doesn't have a lot of parts. It's got a wood block, and it's got the metal lever, and it's got the metal U-shaped part, and it's got a spring, right? So let's say that you had the block of wood. Let's say the block of wood was what already existed. And let's say that you got a random genetic mutation that the next block of wood had the U-shaped metal bar attached to it. That's pretty cool. You got a genetic mutation that added something that's really, really useful. How useful is a wooden block with a metal U-shape on it? Not real useful, right? Has no bar to hold it back, has no spring to snap it. So would that genetic mutation be passed on to the next generation of mousetraps? No, because there's no purpose in the metal U. So the only way random mutations work is if every single piece of it that occurs randomly in order has something really, really useful to add all by itself. You can't randomly get a mousetrap one piece at a time because the mousetrap is totally useless without all four pieces. Genetic mutations in the history of the world, we have observed. Now, granted, we've only been observing these things for a few hundred years. But in the few hundred years we've been observing them, how many positive, that is, advantageous, a gene that you would want to pass on to the next generation, how many advantageous genetic mutations have we observed in the hundreds of years we've been observing them? One with an asterisk next to it, because it's sickle cell anemia. Sickle cell anemia is a genetic mutation. You're missing a gene. The good news about missing that is you can't get malaria. If you miss that gene, you are immune to malaria. That's pretty cool. And then you die in your late 20s or early 30s because you have sickle cell anemia. We think that we can make human beings from that process, one gene at a time, from a single cell amoeba to us by that process, besides just being completely ridiculous. It is impossible. It is impossible. Even if it were possible, it would take quadrillions times quadrillions times quadrillions of years. That's where intelligent design came from, is scientists looking at the data and saying, the theory doesn't fit. The theories that we have, and that's what science is. There's nothing wrong with that. There is nothing wrong with the theory of Darwinian evolution, with the theory that this is how, there is nothing wrong with that. What is so bizarre is that we live in a world where thousands, maybe millions of scientific theories that have been put forward over the last 2,000 years, we've looked at the data, the theory's been disproved, and so we've modified the theory, or we've thrown the theory out. There are all kinds of scientific theories you throw out there, you test them, they don't work, you put them in the trash, you move on. The world doesn't want to do it with this one. The theory makes no sense. Doesn't fit the data. But they will not throw it away. And that's how you know that you're dealing with more than just a scientific issue. You're dealing with a spiritual issue. You're dealing with Romans 1. Their eyes are darkened, they've hardened their hearts. And that's where it becomes so tough for me. And I do share Jake's conviction. We tread lightly in these discussions because there are lots of people smarter than us who hold what I would say is a very wrong view. So what they used to say, and what some of them still say, is that God created the matter that evolution needed and created the process so that the chance is actually taken out of it.
Okay. Okay. Would end up exactly how he wants. That's how he exercises his sovereignty, isn't it?
It will end up exactly the way he wants. These mutations are not really mutations in that sense of the word. They are his purposeful having things develop over time. Even that, they still have a time problem now that they didn't realize they had before, which is fine. They got billions of years to work with. But it's why you see more and more theistic evolutionists saying, and I'll talk about this more next week, that God designed categories of life. So he didn't just make single-cell amoebas anymore and have everything come from that. He made categories. He made bacteria. He made, my categories are going to be too big, but you'll know what I mean. Fish, birds, mammals. And then evolution, natural selection takes over from there, and that's how we get biodiversity. But he made the categories, and he made the process by which you get from one kind of fish to 2 million types of fish. Christians who are trying to fight the good fight but are under-equipped and don't have enough information will say things like, evolution, blanket statement, is completely wrong. Well, that's a dangerous statement to make to someone who wants to argue with you, because I just told you about a monkey tail example, right? And it's true. It's true that if you had monkeys with weak tails and monkeys with strong tails, even if they got them by genetic accident, the strong-tailed monkeys are going to dominate the species moving forward. Survival of the fittest is a real thing, right? And if something happens, you can see this happen in populations. A population of bees could have a particular type of flower that it has always depended on. And then something happens, and there's a fungal infection, and that flower is wiped out. And the only type of flower remaining where the bees live is this other type of flower that most of the bees were never attracted to, but because of some genetic abnormality, 5% of the bee population did like this second flower. And then what was 5% of the bee population in a generation will become 95% of the bee population because of something that happened in the environment. Fish that don't survive well in this temperature water, and then the temperature of the water changes, and now it's 3 degrees warmer. Fish that had, and that's what they mean when they say the species adapted. It just means there already existed some version of that species that could handle this. And those were the ones that survived and that were in the minority and became the majority because the circumstances changed. That's natural selection at its best. And so we would defend that use of evolution. We would say populations evolve. Populations evolve and adapt to their surroundings.
We would say adaptation exists, but like evolution of an entirely new species doesn't exist.
We would say that, and a good point to really emphasize is the adapted version of that species already existed. It just wasn't the majority. It wasn't the dominant one. The question they've got to answer is, where did that adaptation come from? And all kinds of problems, one of which is, if it doesn't come until the environment changes, it's too late and they all get wiped out.
It also seems, if they were just to
say, how convenient?
Coincidental that when an environmental change happened,
we got just the genetic
that was allowed it to survive in a really,
yeah.
Short period of time.
So we totally agree that populations can adapt. But what adapt means is those that are already predisposed to survival will survive longer. All right, let me wrap this one up just so we get through our three. Empirical data in all forms of science points to a designer. It cannot happen by chance. The current materialistic theories are entirely inadequate to make sense of the data. Now, let's say this clearly. What I'm telling you as a scientist, not as a theologian for a minute, what I'm going to tell you as a scientist, because I believe this as a scientist, the fact that Darwinian evolution is scientifically untenable does not make the Bible true, and it does not mean that science will not ever come up with a theory that is tenable. It is in the realm of logic, it is entirely possible that just like we had all sorts of theories about astrophysics and how planets rotate and how stars work, and we had to throw out a whole bunch of them because they were wrong before science finally landed on the one that when we actually got to fly up next to the stars, okay, this is right. This is how it works. So in the same way, science has the ability to develop new theories for biodiversity and for origins of the universe that fit the data. All I'm telling you is this one doesn't fit the data. Does not work. You understand that point? So some of what we're arguing, even with scientists, is, I say this all the time, be a good scientist. I'm not asking you to believe the Bible. I'm not asking you to set your life mission to prove the Bible. I'm asking you to be a good scientist. Explain to me the time problem, the biodiversity problem, the chance problem, the consciousness problem. Show me that your theory has some sort of answer, and I'll talk about your theory. But when the evidence disproves your theory, and you won't get rid of the theory, you're a bad scientist.